If I had been asked before the age of, say, 30 to make this documentary, I would almost certainly have called it No Compromise. For at that age, life was all about principles and everything was seen in terms of black and white. There was a need then for an absolute certainty about everything. With reprehensible arrogance, I presumed that there was only one way to squeeze the lemon, and that was my way. But as the years crept by, as innocence was lost and experience and a modicum of wisdom catastrophically gained, the counterfeit principles were seen for what they really were: prejudice, intolerance, intransigence, the closed mind. The rigid demarcation line between black and white was blurred perceptibly, the colours diffused to form a softer, more malleable grey. There was less need of certainty, more of blind faith. The views, the feelings of others must be accommodated. I came to appreciate the difference between expediency and honest compromise. Came to appreciate that all successful human intercourse, especially between those of different ages, depends on giving way, finding a common denominator, a halfway house, where intransigence and its attendant acolytes of selfishness and fear have no place. In this halfway house, there is no certainty, no guarantee, no safety net. There is just a blind, blind faith and the courage of the gift.
From the beginning, obviously, there was a particular attraction between us. I had gone through several relationships prior to meeting her, people of my own age. I'm actually in my early 30s now, and she's virtually 60. And there is this very obvious age difference between us.
I'm actually 34, and he was 62, and I've been used to older men. I mean, my father and all his friends, I've often gone out for evenings with them. We've gone to race meetings and so forth. So I never felt uncomfortable in an older man's company.
For 2 years or so, it was a marvellous relationship. She was 25 years younger. But age seemed to make no difference at all. Indeed, she would often say how great it was that the age difference didn't matter.
I'm 50, although I don't actually feel 50 at all. I met Joy, who is 20, so there's quite an age gap between us. I teach at art school, and Joy actually was one of my pupils.
She was a strange girl. She was quite young, attractive, as well as artistically presentable. So I said, well, look, I know it sounds trite and hackneyed, but would you not come up and see the thing? Come and see the etchings, which at least drew a smile from her.
And all of those people started those particular relationships not because of an age difference or in spite of an age difference. Age, at the start, was not a consideration. They did not ask of their partners, how old are you? There was some mutual attraction, some common ground, some instant rapport, some intimation that this may work, we might make it. All started out with hope and enthusiasm. Some lasted, some didn't. Philip is 25 years younger than Hilda.
When we met, I was completely aware of the variation in our age. I didn't meet her specifically looking for a long-term commitment. I met her, as I said, initially on a professional basis. She suggested that I come along to various functions, and gradually our relationship spread beyond the professional. And then what actually sort of sparked it off was, on one occasion, was that she went on holiday, and for 3 weeks she wasn't around. And I realised that quite a number of functions happened in the cultural domain, and she wasn't there, as it were, to go along to them with. And I realised that none of the younger people that I that were my acquaintances were particularly interesting to be with. So when she came back, I had a pretty good idea that I missed this woman for more than just bidding the time of day to her. And from then on, with her sort of frank, outgoing approach, we very, very quickly got together. And we found that we had a great deal more than just cultural interest together. We found we were quite sexually compatible very, very quickly, notwithstanding the age difference.
Ruth was a GP in a North Cork village when she met Alex, an artist, who divided his year between France and his native Cork. They met originally in her surgery and subsequently...
I was driving through the main street and he waved at me one day. And I never, ever do anything spontaneous. I always know what I'm going to do the next moment. And I was surprised at myself that I actually stopped the car and sort of hailed him over. He came over and we just chatted, very trivial, frivolous gossip. And he invited me to dinner. And I was surprised that he said dinner because I was used to going to dinner. And I immediately imagined it to be some, my usual sort of formal restaurant. But he said, you might come to dinner in my place. And I said, OK, are you going to cook? And he said, yes. So I was really excited that night, getting ready to go to... I suppose I knew that I was going to embark on some sort of a new experience. I'd never dated anybody that wasn't in my own peer group.
Alex, 23 years older than Ruth, remembers how it began, a short time after his arrival in the village.
It was a very nice area with a good view of the river, and it took a small flat there. Well, the trying to settle down and strike up relationships with people in the area. I had occasion to visit the local surgery. Jokingly, I described it as a bruised libido to the doctor, and she was not at all impressed at this. She seemed to look upon me as a sort of a little boy in long trousers, but she had the most fantastic jawline. The colouring was right, her face, her profile. I had practically forgot why I went there in the first place. I just had to have her in one of my paintings. It was almost finished. She was like the piece of the jigsaw puzzle, the missing piece. So she was busy with stethoscopes, and in my mind's eye, I had a palette going. So at the end of our her running the and explaining to me the tablets and what one did with them, two before and after, or baths or hot water. I could never quite figure out what it was about anyway. I explained to her why I kept staring, and would she please sit for me?
And so they started out on the most deliciously intriguing and dangerous journey in the world, the journey of two people toward each other, full of ponderable and imponderable components. A veritable minefield where attitudes, idiosyncrasies, foibles, family, friends, status quo, and ultimately, perhaps primarily, age and how they handled it would be the deciding factor. And so the protagonists each had different needs, different expectations. Each brought something different to the relationship. Each took something different from it. Philip's partner, Hilda, comes from Germany. This, he finds, has helped their relationship.
Again, her continental roots, I think, give her a different perspective on growing old than a great number of Irish women that I know. She's not as conditioned to sort of fading and just becoming the stereotypical old woman that many people here in this country are, in that she has retrained, she's gone into computers, she has virtually created a second career for herself in arts administration. And I'm delighted about that, because it has virtually given her an entirely new lease of life.
For Anne and her partner Joy, their lesbianism helped.
It was the friendship and it was the interests. And I think there's a wonderful thing between two people of the same sex, in that there isn't the same kind of competitiveness. I would think there's more of a freedom, really.
For Alex the painter, there was a dual need, the personal and the artistic. But Ruth's background, while not a problem at that stage, did sound some kind of warning, however faint.
She did, in the fullness of time, she sat and we painted, and it was quite successful and sold well. At which stage I invited her out, as the model was worthy of her hire. I couldn't very well offer her money. She seemed to be above that sort of thing. She was, I found out from talking to people, a descendant of a long line of doctors, and respectability was everything. She wasn't exactly one you'd make a pass at. Well, not immediately anyway. And the dinner went well, and I said it to her. I said, I need you to actually sit in on a lot of other paintings that I have that need profiles, they need people, they need to be brought to life. She seemed to bring out a different feeling in me for the paintings. A lot of stuff I had done prior to her, were they were dead, there was no life, there was no vibrance. She just seemed to be the essence of the things. So she appeared in, I suppose, 6, 7, 8 out of the next 10 paintings I did, at which stage we were spending hours, evenings, weekends together. And a certain intimacy, well, to be frank about it, we wound up living together. Her respectability and her profession didn't allow it to become an open secret. So just a few people knew about it, and we did a sort of dirty weekend in Brighton, and except it was Clonakilty or Dublin or Glengariff or wherever the occasion demanded. And I found I became more and more dependent on her. The artistic side, it just wouldn't work without her presence. Now, she didn't seem to have any problems with me. We came and went and took each other up and put each other down as need arose, artistic or physical.
For Ruth, it was different. For the kind of relationship she envisaged, such high seriousness and consequent commitment was never a consideration.
I never felt that there was anything very permanent about myself and Alex, and I always felt that he felt the same way as well. And as I said, I felt that he got too dependent on me, and I was fed up of people. I was fed up with people leaning on me all the time. I've always conformed to what my father wanted. I've even conformed to what the people in the village wanted of me. And I didn't want to feel that I would marry Alex just because I've had a sexual relationship with him. I suppose I was reared quite Catholic as well, and that I felt, you know, you shouldn't have a serious sexual relationship with somebody before you marry them. And for the first time in my life, I just didn't give a damn. I didn't care that I was giving into my own sexuality, that I was having a nice, friendly fling, or so I thought, with Alex. And I don't think I wanted to go any further.
For Martin and his much younger lady friend, there were serious problems from the beginning.
Oh, yes, we saw a lot of each other, mostly at weekends. We lived in different parts of the country, so mostly we went away somewhere where people didn't know us. You see, she was separated and didn't want the neighbours in the village where she lived to know about us. Well, that was a bit of a strain, but not too bad. The biggest strain was that sometimes I'd spend a weekend at her place and I'd have to be smuggled in her car after dark, so the neighbours wouldn't see me. And during the day I'd have to go around the house very carefully, staying away from the windows in case I might be seen. And the worst was that sometimes I'd have to go down on all fours to pass a window. All that was very stressful.
I don't know why, but somewhere dreams come true.
Came a time when they thought about and discussed, if not age per se, then some direct or indirect ramification of it. and there were many. For some it was a worry, for others not.
It's something that we've never shied away from. There hasn't been any sense of living in some kind of cloud cuckoo land. She is, it must be said, a remarkably fit woman and has always walked and swum very, very regularly. Takes a lot of exercise, takes great care of herself physically, and is, while we're not talking about sort of some nubile young beauty, she is in remarkable shape for her age. And this obviously will stand her in good stead. Now, inevitably, as I head into my 50s, she will be nudging the 80 mark. And therein lies a problem. Now, I mean, if she, we've discussed this, and she has encouraged me very much to sort of to think in terms of at least two partners in life, that she feels that should she live to be 80-something, so to speak, that still gives me a chance in my early 50s or mid-50s even to find a second partner. And she would encourage that, and she would encourage the notion of family. And naturally, that's something that I thought about long and hard, because by abjuring, as it were, the company of a young woman of my own age and opting instead for Hilda, I put off, or deferred, so to speak, the idea of having a child of my own with my partner. And should she live to be to the ripe old age of 80-something, I can feel confident about perhaps starting a family somewhere in my 50s. And by the time I'm her age, they will be reasonably mature and able to look after themselves.
And sometimes third parties could present some problems, albeit not too distressing or insurmountable.
Only in little tiny ways, and ways that would surprise you. There was one night, for example, when one of Joy's friends came home, and the friend was the same age as Joy. And I just had this feeling of being out of it, and it was the first time I'd felt that with her. They were talking about something that I really wasn't clued in about, and I felt this slight exclusion that she may have other interests that didn't coincide with mine. But I suppose if I were really honest, there was a kind of niggling thing there. And then it happened in different ways. We went out one night, and somebody came who was a vague friend of mine, and she immediately assumed that Joy was my niece. And that kind of hurt as well. It kind of brought it home to me, maybe how we looked on the outside. And I think I was a little angry too. And there is the feeling, yes, where will I be when I'm 60 and 70 and she is still a young woman? There is that niggling feeling.
For some, especially where one partner is more serious about the relationship than the other, there is the inevitable contretemps.
It was a dependency more than an age difference. And the dependency, I began to realise, was practically all on my side. I made the running. My need was paramount. She was available, as suited her, and gradually over a period of time, I got the feeling that I just couldn't paint anymore if she wasn't involved, if she wasn't there. I touched on this gently and explained to her how she was affecting my work, and that I felt that she should be a permanent fixture in my life, that I wasn't this weekend business, was it's all very well for a young man who can take it and go and come back when the occasion demands. But I had a need. She had to be there. I mean, I just couldn't go on without her anymore. So I asked her, would she move in on a permanent basis? Or what did I need to do to legitimise and make our relationship permanent? A fixture set in stone. This, she didn't seem to react as I expected her. She started to back away from it. She said the artistic world is all very well, but there's a major age gap here. I mean, what will my parents say? What will society say to us? I said, who gives a fiddler's what they say? I mean, it's really us. No, she said, there is more than just us involved in this. There's my parents. I mean, they probably know already. it was very, I found it very difficult when I realised that if I was afraid if I pushed any harder, that she would keep moving back from me, because that's what was happening in our relationship. Eventually, I found that she was not available. She had less time for me. She seemed to be putting barricades between us, pushing me back, telling me that I should spread myself around more.
While there were aspects of the relationship that Ruth liked and found liberating, she viewed his dependency and its possible consequences with alarm.
Sexually together, I felt we were great. There was a lot of passion in both of us. I think definitely he aroused me in a way that I felt uninhibited with him, I suppose. But I did begin to worry when I discovered that he became rather too dependent on me, and he started to get too possessive. I liked it initially when he was more nonchalant and he'd say, "Ruth, drop up and maybe I could sketch you or we could go for a walk." But after a while, I felt that he really needed me to be there, and I just don't think I was ready to settle down with a man that was twice my age, that I could envisage being so old and so, almost to put it bluntly, crinkled in almost 5 years' time. And I think I've had enough of duty. I'm a doctor, I'm used to treating patients, and I don't think I wanted to turn around again and have to feel that in 5 years' time I was going to be either pushing somebody in a wheelchair or having to make breakfast for a semi-invalid. Or I didn't really want to have to curb my lifestyle.
Now, while Martin was far less dependent on his partner than Alex, and though he adopted a much more subtle approach, his suggestion was equally unacceptable.
Well, as the relationship got to be more serious, I thought every second weekend was not enough to be seeing each other. So I suggested that I come to live in a large town about 12 miles from where she lived. I thought we might see more of each other without actually living together. I was sure this would please her, but it had the opposite effect. She rejected it totally. It just wasn't on. She saw it as making some kind of commitment and wasn't ready for that. She also told me I was too old and my health wasn't good. I do suffer from chronic emphysema. She said she had to be practical and think of self-preservation and what would happen if I got ill.
I don't know why the sky is so blue, and I don't know why I'm so
relationship where there is an appreciable age difference comes to this crossroads, reaches this crisis point, this frontier post. And whether the partners progress beyond that point depends on many things. Love and trust and a blind faith, an openness, a vulnerability, a total lack of intransigence and a modicum of good luck. But the prerequisite is courage, the courage of the gift. For without that, the gift atrophies and dies, lying forever like a putrefying carcass at the bottom of the well of conscience. This is the halfway house where the safety net, the guarantee, doesn't exist, and the only passport is a very necessary compromise. Thomas Hardy knew all about this meeting place of kindred spirits when he wrote, "What we did as we climbed, and what we talked of matters not much, nor to what it led. Something that life will not be balked of, without rude reason, till hope is dead and feeling fled." It filled but a minute, but was there ever a time of such quality since or before in that hill's story? To one mind, never, though it has been climbed foot swift, foot sore, by thousands more. primeval rocks form the road's steep border, and much have they faced there, first and last, of the transitory in Earth's long order. But what they record in colour and cast is that we too passed. For some, as with Philip and Hilda, there is a happy conjunction of all the requisites needed to bring about this marriage of true minds. A coming to meet each other halfway, a generous acceptance by each other of the other's point of view, a magnanimous mutual accommodation of each other's needs. And the fates have afforded them that necessary modicum of good luck in the form of the particular milieu in which they move.
I suppose the set that we move in would be very much to do with arts and theatre, and there's a great age doesn't seem to matter terribly to those kind of people. You have people who have given their life to ballet and who are art of some kind, and they're it's almost like a kind of cultural subgroup. In that there is a great deal of liberal toleration of the kind of relationship we're in. In fact, I mean, we act as a kind of inspiration to some people. In that, certainly, a lot of younger women see how happy I am, and they look at her and they sort of say, you know, I wish I could be like that when I'm her age. Or what has she got that lured you away? And, you know, I just smile knowingly and keep them guessing. It is a bonus because she has, as I say, a great deal of youth and vivacity in her attitude. Her bones may be older, but her attitude certainly isn't.
For Anne, her relationship with Joy has worked out well. She admits to being, at times, conscious of and a little concerned about the age difference, but not to the point where it is a problem.
Because I think one of the marks of our relationship has been honesty, and has been a sharing and an equality that maybe we both felt we couldn't achieve in other kinds of relationships. And I hope we would still be able to discuss that. But it is there, yes. If I were honest, it is there.
A sense of humour has been a great help when, for instance, they are quite often mistaken for mother and daughter.
Sometimes we'd have great fun in playing up to it, of course, you know, taking the mickey out of the people who make such assumptions that if one partner is younger, then the younger one must be using them, or the older one must be using them, or there must be something wrong with them, that there is something strange about it, and that people can't love each other. And I think those attitudes are very hurtful and very ignorant too. Our relationship is a loving, full relationship that I think is as good and maybe much better than many other relationships I've seen going.
For Ruth, when Alex became dependent and, to her way of thinking, demanding, she began to look very closely at the age difference and some of its social ramifications.
I don't think ultimately he was my type. I don't think that I would want in 5 years' time to have to turn around and say, look, why can't we go to the race meeting? Why can't we go to the handball? And for him to answer me and say, look, I just don't feel up to it, I'm too old.
She was also brought face to face with many of the other social and professional taboos attending her affair with Alex.
I thought that I was suddenly after overcoming my inhibition when I met Alex, and that I was suddenly going to do my own thing and sort of be rebellious. But that day that we went to Tom McNoy's and we were in the car and I just saw one of my patients, I just felt quickly we had to drive down the main street and get out into the countryside before we were seen. It was just an instinct. I think I have this self-preservation. I feel that I will never get rid of that feeling that I have to live up to people's expectations, be it my father's or the villagers. They're all an extension of one another. And I just didn't want it publicly known that I was seeing Alex, because then I probably would have the smutty gossip, oh, she's sleeping with him, and we always thought she was such a good girl.
Though she herself saw Alex as a threat, she admits that the family did not.
My father now is in his 70s, and I just keep the clinic, and I don't live at home anymore. I have my own apartment, but I do have evening meals a lot of the time at home, and he knows I'm friendly with him, and he's seen some of Alex's paintings, and he thinks it's quite, what shall I say, British, that I am the subject of somebody's art, and he's quite a connoisseur of art himself. And I think he likes to see it in that genteel manner. I don't think he sees anything sordid, and I daren't even discuss my relationship with him, really. And my mother, well, my mother is involved in so many different organisations that, you know, she really doesn't pry into my private life at all, and I don't proffer any information to her, you know.
Even though for many months it had been evident to both of them that they were drifting in opposite directions, the end came, ironically, at an odd time.
I think the final break came just after the exhibition. I had gathered practically all of the paintings that she was in. There must have been 43 or 44 of them, and we had organised an exhibition to really show off the effect she had had on my artistic endeavours over an 18-month to two-year period. We hired and hung them, and it showed well. The light was good. The crowds came. Everybody seemed very pleased. She was there quite a lot, and I introduced her to a lot of people. She introduced me. Her parents were there. They seemed to be a bit standoffish. I did my best with them. Her father was a particularly difficult, doddery old fool, and as she said afterwards, he wasn't much older than I, but I ignore that remark. I think it must have been the red wine that did it, really. We had a falling out is the only way to describe it, and it spread to the family. She wasn't pleased. At the end of the exhibition, she came to me and she said, "I think it's over, really. There's not much. We can't go any much further with this, considering the way you've behaved, considering everybody here has heard it, what went on." So we parted. I said, "Well, it's just will wear off in a day or two or a week. She'll come to her senses." I just couldn't believe that she would go away like that. A week passed and a fortnight passed and no sign. I'd stopped painting. The red wine was taking its toll, both on me and my pocket. I rang her a number of times, monosyllabic replies. She just was not the receptive person I had known. Eventually, the numbers were changed. That was the final insult. She actually went to the, could you believe, the bother of contacting the post office and changing her number. Now, what was left for me then? No painting, no communication, no telephone numbers. I wrote to her.
But all his letters remained unanswered. The rest was silence. For a while, Alex became reclusive, his self-esteem and his pride badly dented.
I think it's fair to say that I'm not normally the one to be cast aside. Down through my I suppose, youth, for the want of a better word, although I sometimes think it's not that far removed from where I stand now. I have had numbers of lady friends, and I have normally been the one who has done the discarding when they had served their purpose, be it artistic or physical or whatever I felt that I needed. But it's not nice to be the one that's abandoned, that has been left, particularly when I had such long-term plans, and that my art, which to me is everything, it needed her. In fact, it needed her more than I did.
Eventually, with the resilience, the indestructibility of the true artist, he came out of his depression and began to put his life together again.
So I went back to France and back to Aix-sur-Mer, just beyond Nice, for the light, for the peace. And there I sat and painted and wrote. I wrote a letter which was better than any of my paintings. I put my soul, everything was put into it. And I got a reply. One page, one paragraph. Any more letters will just be burned unopened. The pain, the hurt, I took it out on my palette. I took it out on the painting. Everything I did for months was rubbish. I threw them out. I burned them. But at the end, light came in the tunnel. The hurt softened. I found I could approach my art again. But she'll never be forgotten. She creeps into a lot of the paintings. I don't know. Will I ever get over her? Perhaps not. But nevertheless, we all have our memories and I have mine.
Ruth is pragmatic about the whole thing and extremely honest. Indeed, honest to the point where she apologises for it.
I think Alex has enough confidence in himself to realise that at 62 that he's an attractive, vibrant man, and that I don't think that my rejecting him or aborting our relationship, so to speak, is going to upset him. I don't think he believes it's age, and I don't think that it is acutely age. It's just that I can see that he's getting old and I have a lot of my life ahead of me. And again, sounding cold about it, it's just too bad if he thinks that I'm rejecting him because of his age. Because knowing Alex, like I know Alex, I think that, as I said, he'd probably find somebody just as young and just as attractive in no short space of time. He needed me because I was some form of inspiration for his art. He was attracted to me sexually. We talked a lot, but sometimes, and this might sound terrible to say, but sometimes I felt that I was able to outdo him intellectually an awful lot of the time. Initially, I didn't think so, but as soon as I found that he was no longer a challenge to me, I think even sexually things went wrong. I just didn't feel that he was my intellectual equal any longer. So I know it may sound rather cold and callous, but I think that really that Alex was wonderful while he was there and while we enjoyed one another. And I think it was a sort of symbiotic relationship. We both abused and used one another. But I think other than that, he'd probably get over me. He'd probably find some little Lolita somewhere that he can, who will inspire him or who he can paint. But I don't think, I think he wanted me and saw me as somebody else. And I think that as soon as he discovered that I wasn't that person, that he probably would have left me anyway.
Protagonists, with the exception of Martin, have in one way or other come to terms with the problems inherent in any relationship involving partners of such differing ages. He still seems broken, embittered, and somewhat cynical at what he considers such arbitrary and uncaring treatment. And all, he says, for daring to suggest a more serious commitment.
I was shattered by this attitude, totally shattered, at such discrimination. I put it to her that I couldn't understand why age was suddenly a big factor. It hadn't been for 2 years. Why now? Her reply to that really finished me. For the kind of relationship we'd been having, she said, age wasn't important. But for a more serious relationship, it was. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And from someone who had told me so often she loved me. I must say, I find it impossible to cope with such double thinking. Feel betrayed, totally betrayed. Feel I was used all along the line and then dumped. In the end, her status quo, family, friends, place in the community, meant more to her than I did.
Was there no compensation in it for him?
Sure, if I'm honest, there was an element of that. She did give me back, for those 2 years, something of my youth, I suppose. But then, on the other hand, I gave her something, too. You see, she hadn't ever had a good relationship with her father. I feel that, even though she mightn't admit it, I was a kind of father figure for her. Oh, it's all very difficult to come to terms with. And at my age, impossible to get over the sense of betrayal, I feel, of being conned and used.
The farmer poet Robert Frost, that wise old man of New England, got it all in clear perspective in his poem, Reluctance. Out through the fields and the woods, and over the wolds I have wended, I have climbed the hills of view, and looked at the world and descended. I have come by the highway home, and lo, it is ended. The leaves are all dead on the ground, save those that the oak is keeping to revel them one by one, and let them go scraping and creeping out over the crusted snow when others are sleeping. And the dead leaves lie huddled and still, no longer blow hither and thither. The last lone aster is gone, the flowers of the witch hazel wither. The heart is still aching to seek, but the feet question whither. Ah, when to the heart of man was it ever less than a treason to go with the drift of things, to yield with a grace to reason, and bow and accept the end of a love or a season.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.